It is good to be back here with all of you at the St. Paul's, to be with your clergy, George and John and Bill, and to have Archdeacon Turner here this morning, the Archdeacon of our diocese, to be with Brad and Leslie, your wardens, and to have the privilege as bishop to preside over confirmation and reception and the reaffirmation of our baptismal vows. I want to begin with a bit of a confession. Whenever I hear our gospel this morning, it reminds me of a time early in my ordained life. I was just ordained, unmarried, and serving as a curate in the Diocese of Indianapolis at a downtown church there. And let's just say I stayed out too late the night before than any good Christian young man should stay out. And I was required by the rector to read the gospel lesson at a morning prayer service prior to a great celebration of Mother's Day. And let's just say I was not paying attention to the markings in the book. And rather than the reading we're supposed to have for Mother's Day, I read today's gospel, where will be set, mother will be set against daughter and daughter-in-law against mother-in-law. And you can just see these women with their corsages on this Mother's Day brunch, and their faces were just crestfallen. Let's just say the rector had a good conversation with me after that liturgy. It has nothing to do with the sermon this morning. I just want to confess my sins in front of all of you. I did learn after that to go to bed earlier on nights when I had something the next morning. I trust that God has forgiven me that particular sin. Please pray with me for a moment. Lord, somehow through my imperfect words and through our imperfect hearing, let the light of your gospel shine into our hearts and set our hearts on fire. Amen. Those who find their life will lose it, and those who lose their life for my sake will find it. In today's gospel, Jesus says plainly to us, if you want to be my disciple, then just get lost. Get lost. Now, he's not telling us to scram, to get out of my sight, as we usually hear that phrase of get lost. He's rather saying, get lost. Get lost, because when you're lost, then I can find you. Get lost, because only when you're lost can I find you. So, how can we get lost so Jesus can find us? It's not all that easy anymore to get lost, is it? I mean, we have devices like GPSs on our smartphones. It's really hard to get lost. And even if we don't like where we are right now in our lives, even if it's painful or destructive where we are, staying where we are often seems better to us than getting lost, going into the unknown. That's because, in case you haven't realized, we human beings aren't real fond of change. And we're even less fond of giving up control of our lives. That's why we will doggedly stay where we are, even when we know where we are is not a good place to be. We'll stay there. And getting lost then would mean that we'd have to admit that we are lost, that we don't have complete control, that we don't know the way forward. Yet Jesus tells us, if we're not lost, he can't find us. Getting lost, you see, requires for us to have a spiritual change of venue, where we give up the stranglehold we have on our lives and trust someone and something outside of ourselves that we can't control to find us. And that someone is Jesus, and that something outside of ourselves is His grace, mercy, and forgiveness. So in getting lost, Jesus is calling you and me to do something that's kind of like dying, as St. Paul would say in our epistle lesson this morning. And it's something like being born again to a new life. Getting lost is kind of like a death. It is like dying. It's dying to the old way we have seen ourselves, the old way we've seen the world around us, and being born anew so we can see ourselves differently, and we can see the world around us differently. Getting lost helps us to wake up and to begin to pay attention to ourselves as we really are, not as we fantasize ourselves to be, not as we pose to be in front of other people. And we all have that posing that we do. It's also paying attention to the world around us. Our lostness, if you will, that's not a word, but let's use it anyway. Our lostness takes us out of the rut of the familiar, where we take so much for granted and we assume so much, and it thrusts us into unfamiliar territory where we might see things clearly, maybe for the first time. But if we stay where we are and we don't get lost, we can convince ourselves of many things, can't we? We can convince ourselves of many things we want to believe are true. Like that old phrase that we are masters of our own fates and captains of our own souls. Staying put, staying where we are, helps us stay in denial about our true selves. Now, getting lost doesn't require us to physically move. We can get lost by staying put. We can get lost right in our kitchens or our living room. We can get lost at the bed of a dying loved one. We can get lost in the midst of a soup kitchen line. We can get lost while waiting for a stoplight to change. As I said, it's a spiritual change of venue. It's not a physical change of venue where we, like the prodigal son, come to ourselves and say, I've squandered so much of my life, and recognize just how truly lost we are. And that's when Jesus says He will find us. And He will find us every time. So what might that look like? What might that look like for us? What are some examples of getting lost? Well, to answer that, all I can do is tell you stories of the saints and sinners that I've known or known about. So I think first of Sister Constance, an Episcopal nun who in 1878 in Memphis, Tennessee, got lost by not running away, even when everybody else was running away. You see, there was a devastating yellow fever epidemic in Memphis in 1878. And the epidemic had broken out, and many in the city were dying, and her superior in the order said, Constance, run away. Save yourself. Get lost out there, away from the people. And although afraid for what it might mean for herself, Constance and her companions decided to stay and get lost by ministering to the sick and dying. And Constance did that until she herself died. She had a spiritual change of venue by staying right where she was. I think of William Wilberforce, an Englishman born into privilege in the 18th century. And due to a family inheritance, while he was still at college, he found himself independently wealthy. Would never have to work another day in his life. He had everything anybody who could possibly want. And then he did what most young men in his place would do. He spent most of his college life and his few years after college devoting himself to card playing, gambling, and late night drinking sessions with his friends. Been there, done that myself. And all that made him very, very popular. When that kind of lost its allure, he ran for parliament and won a seat. So now Wilberforce found himself with wealth, popularity, and political power. But where he found himself began to eat at him. He recognized that he needed a spiritual change of venue. So Wilberforce got lost. And when Jesus found him, Jesus led him to abolish the slave trade in England. It took him decades of dogged determination. He spent the better part of his life doing so. Even though he was told time and time again, to do this is political and career suicide for you, William. Stop it. You're going to ruin all your wealth and all your privilege and all your power. To that, Wilberforce replied, I'm not interested in doing what's right politically. I'm not interested in what will benefit my career. I'm interested in doing what is right in the eyes of God. And lost in God's grace, Wilberforce found purpose for himself. I could tell story after story of the saints of the church, and they're really all just one story. They'll have different permutations to it, but it's one and the same story every time. In each one, the saint finds himself or herself at a complete loss, and then they get completely lost. And then Jesus finds them. And then he sends them forth to share his grace, his mercy, and his forgiveness. Thus they trade in their old frame of reference for a new one. They die to their old self, and they are reborn to a new self, one that makes sense of the world only through the eyes of Jesus Christ and him crucified. Now, I've told you two stories of two saints, and I promised you a couple stories of sinners as well. Her friends told her, once a drunk, always a drunk. It's genetic. It's in your family system. It's in your blood, something that can't be changed. And since she had been a drunk most of her adult life, her grown daughters sent her Mother's Day cards every year which said, I hate you more this year than I hated you last. She was completely lost. Completely lost. Then someone she knew slipped her a note. And she told me, this is what the note said. I know what you're going through. I've been there too. Jesus will find you right where you are right now. And Jesus found Ruth right where she was. And today she's sober. And she's free. And then there's the sinner who is also the Bishop of Georgia. He spent most of his life trying to convince God that if he just worked hard enough at being righteous and also, I must admit, self-righteous, then God and everyone else would approve of him. Well, that road got me completely lost. And it wasn't until I realized how lost I was that Jesus finally found me and convinced me that his grace was all I needed and nothing more. Saints and sinners alike need to get lost. They must get lost before Jesus can find them. There's a story of a man who was walking one day down a crowded city sidewalk. Without warning, he fell into a deep, dark hole in the sidewalk. And there he found himself at the bottom of this deep, dark hole, completely lost. He could barely see up to where the people were hurriedly walking past on the sidewalk. They paid no attention to the hole or that man in the hole. And he began to yell for help, but no one seemed to notice. And when he lost almost all hope, his cries were heard by a passing judge who looked into the hole and asked him what his problem was. He said, "What does it look like? Isn't it obvious I'm stuck in this hole?" And the judge, without saying a word, scribbled on a piece of notebook paper and tore it off and threw it down into the hole. The man grabbed the paper, and the paper said, "This is an order for your immediate release." The man was crestfallen. He despaired, but he began yelling again. This time a priest heard his cries, stopped and asked, "What's the matter, my son?" The man said, "I'm down in a hole. I'm lost and I need help." The priest took out his own notepad, scribbled on it, dropped it down into the hole. The man took the note and it said, "I will offer prayers for you at the altar this Sunday." The man despaired even more. And he just began wailing and crying. He couldn't yell out anymore. And then a total stranger stopped and looked down into the hole. And the man at the bottom of the hole couldn't even look up much to see what was going on. He just began to sob uncontrollably. And the next thing he knew, that stranger had jumped down in the hole right next to him. And the man said, "Why did you do that? Now both of us are lost down in this hole." The other man said, "No, we're not. You see, unlike you, I've been here before, and I know the way out. Jesus will find us. Whenever a hole we're in, Jesus will find us when we're lost. But we have to be lost in order for him to find us. Amazing grace, how sweet the sound, who saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now I'm found. I was blind, but now I see." My best advice for you is this: get lost.